Welcome to the Last Round MMA.
The guy's never beaten me. In order to be the champion, you have to beat the champion.
A podcast for the MMA fan.
Imagine that. Look at everybody up here. They're all dressed like me. They're all trying to talk like me. They're all trying to be me.
Bringing you in-depth interviews and more from across the MMA world.
This is like pride. You know, everybody's here. I feel great. And, you know, I can't wait. Saturday night, I'm going to crush this guy hype.
Are you ready? Let's start the show.
Welcome to the Last Round MMA. And today we have Chevy, the Wildman Bridges. Thanks for joining me, Chevy.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. How are you?
I'm good. No, thanks for giving me the time today to really record about your career. And let's just jump straight into it. So, you know, where did you grow up and how did you get into combat sports?
I come from a small town in Oklahoma. It's called Durant. It's real small, man. We're known for not a lot of good things and a giant peanut. Fighting, man, it's pretty much all you really have to do around here is fighting some type of way. Either you're fighting, you know, the life that you're given to do better than what you're handed out, or you're fighting the urge to do drugs around here, because that seems to be the trend. For me, it was fighting everybody. I mean, started young. When I was a kid, my dad would always be, you know, a little extra aggressive with me and abusive in some ways, and, you know, treat me like a man for messing up, doing wrong, you know, bad things. And I wasn't a perfect kid by any means, but that kind of started paving the way, getting that, I guess, in a way, the universe showing me that's what my life was going to be, to get used to, because it happened so much. And I always wondered why it was my life, why I was getting beat up on. I didn't like it. I didn't like violence. And it just, one thing led to another. And then, you know, it just kept going on with people in my life, bullies from school, people picking on me, my brother and his friends. You know, like I said previously, they used to buy me alcohol. It was a little small pint of Jack Daniels, and they would trick me and make me think they were going to party with me and be cool. And, you know, I get to be one of the cool guys and hang out with big kids and drink. And before I knew it, I was the only one drinking. And next thing you know, they want to go outside and line up and all start fighting, because that was the best way to get me to fight them back and not have them fight each other, because, you know, of course they were buddies. So it was the best way to get little brother to do it without telling the mom, was getting drunk, didn't feel nothing. Thought I was having fun, thought I was partying. So, and that kept going for quite a few years until I got, I guess, better at it, started figuring out how they were fighting. And I landed a good one on one of his best friends. And that was the end of that. So no more Jack Daniels for me.
What's the age difference? You say like little brother, to like how many years?
I'm 2 years younger than my brother. So not a big age difference, but we didn't grow up together. He was always more, I say, mentally mature. He always had like the more grown side of friends. I was always the younger kid into Pokemon, into Yu-Gi-Oh, you know, shit like that. And he was into the rap music, being cool, hanging out at the movie theaters, riding in cars. So I feel he's a lot older than me than he really is, just because our life age was. A lot of his buddies were a little older. I think he had one buddy that was like maybe 4 years older than me, probably about 3 foot taller. That was not the buddy that I landed the punch on. That was not
that. Something you touched on just then is you said that, you know, you grew up not liking violence. So I'm sure that people who were listening are kind of, they're going to be like, well, how did that transition into you, you know, getting into combat sports and now being a fighter?
Man, that's a really good question. As a kid, I didn't like it because I did get beat on and stuff. And like I said, I got picked on. So it wasn't something I enjoyed, because I felt like it was a way for the world to attack me. So I didn't feel like I had a part of it. I felt like I was always the target. So it was just never fun being the punching bag, I guess is the best way to word that. How it shaped into fighting, it just kept going on and on that way. I mean, I get into my 14, almost 15 years old, and my brother is living with a guy at a gym. He's got a girl pregnant. He's working, making money, trying to do the right thing. And here I am now doing the bad stuff. I'm on probation. I'm not checking in. I'm about to go to, you know, juvenile for not checking in and smoking pot with my friends, being stupid, being a delinquent. And my brother got me into this guy with this gym where they're they were doing MMA here in town. And even then, I didn't like it. I didn't like violence. It made me nervous. I would get, you know, real shy, if you will, and real closed off and quiet, just didn't feel comfortable around it. Well, then they convinced me to start training and doing it. And then I started figuring out that all the years of getting my ass whooped and beat up on my people and getting told to drink these drinks and fight these friends, or when my brother, you know, blacked my eye for not buying him and his buddy a movie ticket, you know, shit like that. It all led up to that moment, because MMA didn't hurt. Getting punched didn't hurt no more. Getting kicked, it was fun. It was, enjoyed it. It was kind of like a tickle, kind of like, oh, I missed this feeling. And I was pretty decent at it. So I started feeling like I slowly began to feel like I belonged somewhere. And it had all added up to that, and that was the reason why I was put through that. Like, I finally started seeing the message I was being told by the universe. So
I was just going to say, how do you think it changed you as a person? It made you, you know, grow in confidence from like how you grew up and, you know, fighting your friends and kind of, you know, taking some beatings from your father to then being, you know, really good in the MMA.
Man, it changed my way of looking at the world. Like, not, I used to look at it from a victim standpoint. Like, why am I the one getting beat up? Why, what about me makes me so unpopular? I'm just trying to be nice to everybody. And it changed my viewpoint from a victim standpoint to a man standpoint, almost, in a way. Like, no matter what life hands you, the universe is going to make you do what you're supposed to do regardless, in whatever way that's going to be. And you can either choose to give up on it, or you can pick up and you can take the tools that the universe gives you and you can work for what you're supposed to be. And that's how it made me look. I mean, yeah, it gave me confidence. It showed me that I can take more than what life can actually handle me, and I can change it into something positive. And it also made me realize that I don't want people out there that used to be like me going through all the same shit I did, just to notice a small amount of greatness in them years down the road, like I have. They need to see that you can come from nothing, you can be nothing, and be something, as long as you're okay with it. So that's what it does for me, and that's all I'm trying to do for my son and for everybody that watches.
So how long between stepping in the gym and then, if the internet's right, you had two amateur fights before turning professional. So how long between stepping in the gym and then having the first amateur fight?
Oh man, I was about 14 and a half when I started training. And in, you know, Oklahoma, I'm sure everywhere in the United States, you have to be 18 to do an amateur MMA fight. So I trained for almost 4 years before my first fight, to where my first fight lasted 35 seconds. And I was really disappointed. Like, this is what I trained 4 years for. Like, this was supposed to be so hard and so demanding, and it wasn't. And it's because I put in the time and the effort to do it. So.
And then your first pro fight was on, I think it's kind of known everywhere in the US, King of the Cage.
Yes. Yeah. Actually, I'd taken a break, man. The dude that, and I'll get back to more of how I started training with that whole life. But that guy had moved away to a different state at that time, and there was nowhere else to train here. So I had taken a break, man. I didn't see any other ways to do it. There was no options for me to move up in a town like this. So I'd give it up. I was going to just live my life doing a regular 9-to-5. And that guy that I'm talking about, he ended up calling my coach now, my cousin, and asking if she had knew anybody that would want to fight last minute, 2 week notice for King of the Cage in Norman, Oklahoma. I needed money, man. I didn't have a job. I didn't know any other options at the time, how to make money. I didn't want to be like everyone else and do something illegal. It wasn't worth the time being taken away. So she asked me if I knew anybody that I used to train with that would want to do it. And I just told her me. I said, I'll do it. I'll go pro, whatever. $2,000. Or no, it wasn't even $2,000. That was, I'm thinking of my BKFC fight. That was $400, I think it was. $200 to show up, $200 to win. So at the time, I was like, you know, $400, whatever, it's quick. And jumped on it. And then that's how my professional career started. It wasn't even supposed to be, but it ended up happening.
So you win that first fight by submission against Larry Woods. What can you remember from that fight? And, you know, how was it, you know, turning professional and then making that walk to the cage?
Man, I was horribly out of shape for that. I was, like I said, I took that fight on a whim, taking like a year off. I was smoking cigarettes. Like, I remember the fun from the fight. I don't remember a lot of the buildup, like the training for it. I mean, it was only like 2 weeks. I don't remember the weigh-ins that much. I remember the fight itself. I remember thinking, I've got to go in here and I've got to, this guy's a striker. I don't know much about him. I didn't have a ton of confidence in myself at this time as a fighter because I haven't fought that much and I only fought twice and took the break. So I was like, I could probably lose this one, but I need the money. So go in there fast, take him down, get him out of his element and try to end as fast as possible so we don't gas out. And as soon as the fight was over, that was the first thing I said to my cousin when I walked out was, I'm glad he tapped because my arms are dead. So.
And did you know after that moment, you're like, you know, that's it. This is what I want to do.
Yeah, it kind of set in. It was it wasn't right away. It was kind of like we got lucky. We got by that one. Let's try not to do nothing too stupid like that again. And then me and my cousin sat there and talked about it. And she pointed out, like, if I can do that off a year off of no training, smoking cigarettes and just showing up and just whipping some ass and going home early, then why keep ignoring it and why not pursue that and make that our life and just make it happen instead of waiting on the opportunity to come to our town or waiting on somebody else to do it? Why not be the ones to do it?
And then that's
how it started.
And then going forward, is it your cousin?
Yes. Yeah. DJ. DJ Pierce is my cousin.
So after that, you were straight back out. I think it looks like 4 months later in December. Rumble on the River against Logan Cunningham, which you actually took your first L. How was that?
Yeah, man, that was a hard one to swallow. You know, I was 2-0 from my amateur fights, 1-0 off my pro debut. I was cocky. I was feeling big headed, like, man, I can train full time in this fight, and I'm going to smoke this dude. He's older. He's a Muay Thai guy. If I take him down, this game over. Didn't go that way. It didn't go that way at all. It was my first real slice of humble pie. So, I mean, it was a good fight. I felt like I was winning the fight. I was landing more damage. I was dropping him. I wasn't rushing him when I dropped him. We exchanged some grappling exchanges on the ground or whatever. And, you know, I felt like I had the better of those. And then next thing you know, I see the referee coming to check on me and I'm go to give him a thumbs up and he starts fading in and out, getting blurry. And I realize I'm being put to sleep. So I was forced to tap for the first time. Felt like a bitch. That was the first time I felt like a real bitch in that moment. I cried. I laid on the mat in front of everybody, bawled my eyes out, cried the whole time they raised Logan's hands. Oh, it was horrible. It was horrible. And that was my first little taste of you're not the biggest, baddest dude on the swing set.
So how did you take that? You know, like how long did it take for you to recover? Because everybody says, you know, like in combat sports, the highest of highs when you win, but the lowest of lows when you lose.
I mean, it was rough. I knew losing came with the game, but being my first one, it was, like I said, it was a big pill to swallow. And it took me a couple months to really mentally get over that. Like I was still training, still ready to fight, do all that stuff. But mentally, I had that doubt. Like if I go out here and fight, maybe I'm not as good as I thought I was. Maybe this next guy's going to beat me. And that's when that doubt started becoming real in my mind. And it's real to this day. And it's because of that fight, that doubt is there, that I know that somebody is going to beat me. So, I mean, it took a while.
Is there anything specific that you do or, you know, you want to do to strengthen that? Or do you think that'll just always be there?
Man, I think it's always going to be there. It, like I said, that was my real big piece of humble pie. It showed me that, like I said, people can beat me. And I'm never going to forget that. That's never going to change. That's reality. I'm not the baddest dude on this planet. I don't care if I'm 13-0 in BKFC and I've got 4 belts and across 4 weight divisions. I'm still not the baddest dude in the world. At the end of the day, I might be called the baddest dude in the world. They might call me the pound for pound best bare knuckle fighter in the world. But there's still going to be that one guy out there. And that showed me that and helped me realize that. I think that gives me an advantage. Because I know that limitation is there. So now I know how far I need to go to exceed that. Instead of someone who hasn't encountered that yet. So now they think it's impossible. So they're gonna have their guard down for that. And that's in my point of view, that gives me that advantage. So having a loss on your record is an advantage.
You think at times it's better to take it because I think maybe the Floyd Mayweather effect, especially in boxing, people tried to protect it for so long. And then still in boxing, not so much in mixed martial arts, people just, oh, he's lost, he's done. You know, he's never going to make anything of himself, where you have guys, and obviously MMA, that are still counted as legends and some of the biggest names in the sports, and they get the biggest purses in like Nate Diaz, Jorge Masvidal.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, it to me, it tarnishes your legacy after so long. Like Floyd Mayweather's, what, 50-0? So if he takes a legitimate boxing fight now, after he's done these multiple exhibition fights that he's done since he fought Conor, no one really believes that he's fighting real fighters anymore. There's a lot of people out there that say he handpicks his fights. Even Logan Paul said he was the one who organized that whole fight. He's picked, made all the rules. He specifies every rule set for his fights. It's hard to believe that he's the greatest in the world when he's making the rules. If me and you fight, and you're 7 foot, 300 pounds, solid muscle, and I'm the size I am, but I'm making the rules for the fight, how am I going to lose? I mean, there's still a chance we're humans, but realistically, I'd look like a fool if I lost and made the rules. So, and that's how I see it. After so long, in Floyd Mayweather's predicament, now Khabib from the UFC, some of his fights were a little questionable, but he's still 29-0. I don't see him cherry picking his fights. And if he was to come back to the UFC right now, I still see him lighting everybody up and dominating on the ground right now. That's a different type of undefeated that it's not necessarily bad to have. Would it hurt him to suffer a loss? Probably not. It would hurt his reputation as one of the greatest to ever do it. But as a man and as a human, I feel like it would probably help him. I mean, but he doesn't seem like a super cocky guy either. So he's kind of, I guess it just depends on person by person.
Right. Do you think one of the benefits of martial arts is it just improves confidence, improves, you know, the mental and physical side of things? And then also, like you touched on, kind of humbles you. You know, people go into the gym and they realize, like you've said, like, I'm not the baddest man on the planet. You know, yeah. You know, especially lately, you see these guys who think they're, you know, street thugs. They'll go into an MMA gym and they'll get beaten up by a pro.
Yeah. I definitely think it does. I mean, it did for me, for sure. I mean, it gives you the peace of mind knowing that, no, we can't stop bullets. We can't stop a knife. We can't do nothing drastic like that. But at the end of the day, I can protect myself. I can protect myself better than the average guy, at least in my mind, that I know for sure. I can protect my family better. I mean, it creates good bonds with people. So for that, it builds confidence for social skills. I mean, you're doing stuff in awkward ways with somebody. So you're going to create a bond with them outside of that area just because of the weird stuff you're doing with the moments you're sharing. I think martial arts is overall better for everything, mental, social, everything, self-esteem, confidence, of course, physicality.
Looking at your career, Chevy, you were pretty consistent until 2014. And then there's a 4-year layoff. What was the layoff due to?
A lot of different things. I lived in New Mexico for a while, and then the guy that I trained with here in Oklahoma, I stayed with him. I moved out there for training. Well, things didn't quite go that way. Me and that guy, we had a falling out, not while I was there, but, you know, kind of did things the wrong way, ended up wanting me to work more than train. So I ended up devoting more of my life to a job than doing what I was actually supposed to be doing out there. So it kind of put me on a hiatus. Went through a lot of bad shit with this person, a lot of threats of like, if you know, you're not loyal to me or you leave me, like I ruin your career, I ruin your life, you'll never be able to do nothing. So a lot of that was fear of being trapped in that situation for so long, not knowing any connections in the fight world, anybody outside of that person. It put me on that hiatus that when I left, I really believed like I wouldn't have had a shot. So it was getting ruined. So I just let it be.
And then you moved back home and then came back out of a semi-retirement, I guess, in 2018.
Yes. Yeah. I moved back home and started talking with my cousin. She was training some amateur fighters here in town at the time. And so I started helping her out, sharing some of my knowledge. And then once again, she convinced me to fight some more and, showed me that, you know, there's somebody in this world that believed in me for my benefit, not for any benefit of their own whatsoever. And so it convinced me to step back in there and do it again. What can I say, man? I loved it. Had a good time doing that one. That was in Atoka. I fought a gentleman named Tolu. I can't pronounce his last name. But that was a fun fight. Wasn't as action-packed as I liked it. It was a decision win. A little bit of a boring fight, but it was a fight nonetheless. I mean, the dude showed up. He tried to press the action. And it just showed me that I still love this game, and that even though that person had told me I couldn't do this without them, that I still could. Because, I mean, the people that were involved with this promotion were still involved with that said person. And I was still able to get a co-main event fight almost four years layoff from fighting. So, I mean, it was a real eye-opener to see that with my cousin behind me there, I can still do that, what I love to do, and, you know, pursue that goal.
So, and then why the transition from MMA into bare knuckle? Because you did think about retirement, right?
Yes and no. I wouldn't say I necessarily thought about retirement. It was more of I was done with MMA. I just didn't know what I wanted to do. It wasn't because of my last MMA loss was a knockout or nothing like that. I didn't feel like I belonged in there. Not skill-wise, heart-wise. I didn't feel like my passion was matching my opponent's passion to be in there. So I didn't feel I was giving him the respect he deserved. I wasn't giving the fans the respect they deserved, the people who bought the pay-per-view. I didn't give anybody what they deserved because my heart wasn't fully in it. So that was mainly the transition over to bare knuckle. It wasn't because of bare knuckle, because I didn't pay much attention to it. I thought it was, you know, like the YouTube videos where the dudes were fighting in Russia with pay bills around them. Never thought there was a chance in hell that some little Oklahoma dude like myself could find a way to get myself into a bare knuckle fight in Russia. It just didn't seem possible. So, you know, it was just something fun passing. And then I saw Artem Lobov and Jason Knight bang it out for BKFC. And that's what really sold me over. I was trying to decide what I wanted to do, whether it was grappling, go back to wrestling, help out the high school with wrestling for their kids, or if it was boxing or if it was kickboxing, whatever. And as soon as I saw that fight, man, it just, all attention and passion went to that. I told my cousin that's what I wanted to do. She tried to talk me out of it. My manager at the time tried to talk me out of it. I told him pretty much to go fuck herself. I was going to do it with or without him. So my cousin did some of her magic and found the Omaha tryouts, and we went on 4 or 5 days' notice. We were both at work because we worked at the same time. And when I was telling her I really wanted to do this and see if I could do it, I wanted to try it, see if I could take the pain, see if I can make it look as cool as it looked. And so she devoted her time to it. Within 30 minutes, found the tryout in Omaha and said, hey, I got $400 that I've got put back. We can go to Omaha if you really want to do this. And I had no money. I had nothing. So I was like, yeah, fuck it. Let's go. But we did it.
Just describe the process, Chevy. Sorry to interrupt you. So like,
no, you're good.
You have to pay to enter the tryouts, and then just explain the day.
No, the tryouts were pretty cool, man. It was really easy, and the people were cool. So from my understanding, a gym, they'll pick a guy that they have on their roster, and they'll pick an area that they want to do it in. So wherever that guy trains at, like mine was in Omaha. So the fighter that I met was Dakota Cochran. He was the one hosting the tryouts at his gym that he trains at. And so the money was just for the travel, the food, and the hotel stay. The tryouts were free. We had to sign up online. You fill out a little form, send it in, and then you get an email confirmation back. And then once you get that, you go. So once we got there, we checked in, told them who we were. They gave us a t-shirt with a little contestant number on it. It says prospect on the back. We all put on these shirts, and then Nate Chook starts breaking down the itinerary, pretty much what we're going to do. There's interviews, there's mitt work, there's bag work, there's a punch meter. And then he even told us we're going to be doing a little bit of bare knuckle sparring. And that was really what kind of sold it for me. It wasn't nothing hard. It was pretty much just basic contact, just making contact to show what the punches would be there and how to make your fist land bare knuckle. And it just, man, it was really fun. It was a new way to spar for me, and it was crazy. So we did that. We did We did about 5 minutes on bag work while the other group did 5 minutes on mitt work, and then vice versa. We swapped, and then we did about 5 minutes of shadow boxing, and then they brought us all in for a little quick little 15-second interviews, and then they just went around and kind of picked who they wanted to do extensive interviews, I guess, from there. And then that was pretty much it, man. Just went back to the hotel room, stayed, woke up, and went back home.
And I
didn't even get a call. I didn't get – no one talked to me at the tryouts. I mean, I talked to Dakota and Derek Minner, his buddy that trains with him up there, and I talked to Nate a little bit. But it was more so Dakota and them saying they liked what I had. They thought I looked good, looked like a legit fighter. So I really thought maybe, you know, everyone was looking at me. I'm going to get the contract. I'm going to win. I'm going to be the one they call. Like, I was feeling good. And then I didn't get called for the extensive interview. So that's when the confidence started depleting real bad. So I took a desperation shot and I went up to Nate and I introduced myself and I told him wherever, whenever, whoever, whatever weight. And he said, really? Like kind of like a questioning, like, oh, are you sure? So he, kind of like a testing. He was like, well, I've got a 165 fight in a week and a half if you want to do it. And I said, fuck it. I'll fight whoever at 165. I said, that's what I walk around at. Let's go. I never got the call, but I ended up talking with Dakota a little bit before I left and ended up giving me his phone number. I talked to him once I got back home and like, hey, man, how do I get into this? How do I know when they're going to pick the contract winners? You know, yada, 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 pretty much. And he said, just be patient, man. He goes, I know they liked what they saw. He knows me and my team liked what we saw with you. I talked to Nate. He goes, here's this guy's number, Kevin Smith, my manager now. He's like, give this guy a call. He's a manager for BKFC. He might be able to get you some fights and get you in the right direction towards BKFC. So I called Kevin, man, and I talked to him for maybe 15 minutes. And I guess Dakota had already reached out to him about me. And next thing you know, 15 minutes later, I'm signed with Smith Brothers Combat Sports. Starting to look for fights, stay ready, kind of a waiting period still at that point. So I signed with them, I think, in August of last year. And so there were events coming up around that time where we were like, hey, get us on this card. And it just wasn't happening yet. It was just, oh, you got to take your time. You got to wait your turn. And then next thing I know, my buddy that I met at the tryouts, Matea Fonda, fights for BYB now. He was fighting for them in Wichita in October of last year. And he was fighting LJ Homerick Jr. So I saw that on Facebook. I was like, oh, that's cool. You know, he was at the tryouts. Maybe he got the contract. He's getting a fight. That's badass. And then one day I woke up, I got off Facebook and Matea Fonda had posted a fight poster, but it said canceled across his face. And it was an hour old post, man. There was no likes, no comments, no shares yet. So I didn't even like it. I didn't do shit. I just closed Facebook immediately and called Kevin. And thankfully, he answered really fast. And when he did, I said, I want it. I said, Matea Fonda pulled out. I said, it's been an hour since he posted on Facebook. I said, I want that fight. I said, I don't give a fuck who the guy is. I see it's at 145. I said, I'll do that. You can tell the guy since it's, you know, 12 days, don't stop cutting. We'll do it at 55, make it a little easier for him to say yes so I can get a fight pretty much, not him just be like, well, fuck it, I'm not fighting it. So he called me back 3 days later and said, congratulations, you got yourself a fight. So he said, see you in, what was it? Pretty much, I think, eight, nine days. What did he say? Yeah, see you in 9 days. So that's what I did, man. Showed up, went to Wichita, didn't really cut any weight, just kept training as normal, working out, getting stronger, staying in shape. And we drove off to Wichita and put on a show.
How does the training, you know, differ from, you know, what you had to do in MMA? Is it easier in one aspect that you focus on one discipline?
Yes and no. It is because it's more mentally, it's mentally less stressful. I guess the best way to say that, because I'm not worried about someone kicking me. I'm not throwing kicks. I'm not worried about my stance being perfect for a kick or for a knee, or worrying about ducking too low or catching a knee, or, you know, shit like that. Everything that's involved with MMA, it's a lot less stressful than MMA mentally. Now, where I say it's no, is because now that I'm practicing just one discipline, that means all that extra work I was putting into my kicks, my knees, my grappling, my wrestling, that all goes into my punches now. That all goes into my cardio. That all goes into my strength and conditioning. That all goes into everything. And it makes all of those that were just little pieces to the puzzle a lot bigger to carry. So it's getting used to that was the hardest part. Getting used to just boxing, the arms being tired, chest being tired, shoulders being tired from so many punches. And that was the hardest part. And now I feel it's easier to get ready for bare knuckle than it is for MMA now. I mean, once you know what it is, you know what to expect, you know it's going to hurt, you just got to do it. And no matter how many times I practice a combination, the motherfucker I'm fighting that night might just be better than me. And that's one thing about bare knuckle that I love. It doesn't matter how skilled you are versus how skilled I am. If your knuckle hits me in the right spot, my skills go out the window and I'm going down. So it's more fun to prepare for bare knuckle because I get to do more natural stuff. I get to do hand conditioning, shit that makes my body hurt. So when I go to a fight, it doesn't hurt. It makes me feel like I'm actually a real fighter, not an athletic fighter now. I get to do the shit that I used to watch in Rocky, where he trained in Russia or trained outside with the earth. Like, that's the shit a lot of these bare knuckle guys are doing, is training outside and with nature and everything. And it's a lot better. It's a lot better feeling, I feel, for me. It's really cool.
What do you do for conditioning your knuckles, conditioning your hands ready?
Not enough.
for people listening on the podcast, is it a broken hand at the minute, Chevy?
Yeah, right now, yeah. Well, it's not broken now. It's fixed. I just went through surgery, so it was fractured. So it's better now. But what really helps with a lot of that is I get rice, like white rice, long grain white rice, and I'll put it in a 5-gallon bucket or sand, and I will open my hands and drive down and bring it to a fist and open it and squeeze it a few times, make a fist, push all the way down and sit there and move around, and that'll strengthen the tendons, the muscles, and everything for your grip. A lot of grip training techniques for like weights and stuff, like towel hangings or towel pull-ups, if you will, to help your grip train. They have these little I don't know exactly what they're called. It's like a little sandbag. It's a little square. And then they have one that's like a little pad. And you can put it on the wall somewhere and you can sit there and you hit that. And it toughens up the ligaments and the skin and everything around you and the bones to prepare for that impact with no cushion.
And for sparring, like MMA gloves, you use boxing gloves?
I mean, I still spar with my buddies that do MMA stuff still, so they'll do boxing sparring with me. So a lot of times it's boxing gloves. But when I have a fight coming up and I'm sparring for that bare knuckle fight, they'll put on either MMA gloves or MMA sparring gloves, where it's like an MMA glove, but a little more cushion. But I think they're only like 7 ounces, and then we'll do the MMA gloves if we don't have any other options.
And then one thing I've always wondered is when you're sparring, obviously, for boxers, you have the head guards, you have the bigger gloves, and you can kind of take a shot and maybe become accustomed to that, you know, take one to give one. In BKFC, like in bare knuckle, you can't do that. So how do you stop yourself getting accustomed to wearing like a head guard? So like when you spar, do you not wear one?
A lot of the times I do, now that I'm in bare knuckle, just so I don't take in a lot of damage so my career can be longer for the fights. Or if my head gets too hot and I get a little too warm, I'll fling it off. I don't like to wear them if I get hot. But, I mean, headgear or no headgear, me and my buddies, we whip the shit out of each other. We're getting ready for a fight. So we're not dumb about it. We're not just beating the shit out of each other. But we make our hits count if they're going to land. And we help each other out in the moment. If we're landing, say I'm landing a jab too many times on my buddy and he's just not seeming to get it and it's just fucking him up, I'm eventually going to be like, hey, this is what you're doing. You need to move your head. So we do shit like that. But when we spar, we come to spar. I mean, I've got a scar on my nose where me and one of my sparring buddies, our heads collided and split it right open. I mean, as you saw my first bare knuckle fight, I had a black eye. That's from my buddy Zach. So we just get ready for fights, man. We whip the shit out of each other. And I wear headgear. I think one of the other guys wears headgear every now and then, but we're not trying to hurt each other. We're not putting 100% of power into it. We're working our techniques, our timing, and we're letting those do the damage themselves. So, and it's at the end of the day, we're buddies. We know what we're here for. So it's not that bad. I mean, we spar hard, but it's not that bad. It's not as bad people think.
How hard is, you know, training camp? Because at the minute, you're still working. You're not a full-time fighter at the minute.
Yeah, training camp's hard, man, especially when you've got a full-time job like me. I've got a hard labor job, so not only do I work almost 8 hours in the fucking heat all day, lifting 2x4s, putting up drywall, hammering shit, doing all this stupid stuff, but then I got to turn around and go work out for almost 3 hours. It's very hard. I'm a lazy individual. I say it's not worth it. I don't like working out. I only do it because I have to. It's ridiculous. I think it's stupid how much work we have to put in to be able to fight like we do. It makes sense. It does, from being in there and seeing it and being tired from being in a fight out of shape versus being in shape. But I don't understand why it has to be that way. Why can't we just show up and fight?
Give us an example of a couple of days for Chevy. Like, you get up at 4 a.m., you go for a run. What time you work? What time you finish work? Give us an example.
That's pretty spot on exactly how I start my day. I get up around 4:35, and then I go for about a mile and a half, 2 miles of a run. I'll come home. I'll drink my protein shake. I'll take my morning supplements. I'll drink my cup of coffee. And then I head off to work. And then after, I'll come home. I'll eat my lunch, which will be something super strict and healthy in a protein shake, which is nasty. I hate all that. And then I'll go back to work, finish out my day. Finish out my day. And then when I get home, I've only got maybe 30 minutes to an hour before I go to the gym. So I've got to take a quick rinse off, get all that filth off from work, all the fiberglass, drink another protein shake, get my pre-workout, my vein supplement that I take that opens up the oxygen in my veins so they can breathe better. And then as soon as I'm done with that, it's getting my bag ready and I'm out the door, going to the gym. And when I get to the gym, I run either a mile to 2 miles to warm up. And then I jump rope for 15 minutes to warm up. And then I do another warm up that my coach will make for me of a little circuits and stuff. And by the time I'm sweating a good 3-4 pounds out, the workout begins. And then I start doing it'll either be heavy lifting depending on what day it is, or we'll be doing explosive training or change of direction. Footwork, of course, abs is always included. Man, cardio, and she's going to kill me when she watches this. I'm not naming it all right. Cardio, let's see, explosion, change of direction, technique. Gonna kill me. Heavy weight training, kettlebells. I'm obviously not the coach. I don't know.
How many rounds? So you get a fight, Chevy. You get, I don't know, 5 or 6 weeks of camp. How many rounds of sparring? Like, do you like light sparring? Are you a heavy sparrer? Will you do a lot of rounds before?
I try to spar once or twice a week if I can, because there's no gym where I'm at. We have to travel 30 minutes each way to find a gym to spar at. So we try to go once or twice a week, especially when there's a fight. We definitely go once a week. But every time I spar, it's at a minimum of 10 3-minute rounds, give or take, mixing in with the guys, us alternating between partners. But we all sit there and try to go at least 10 rounds. We all try to do that for all of our fights. That way, we're more than prepared when it comes time to fight, because we've been training and sparring and doing this for months leading up to the fight. Pretty much double the fight. The way TJ looks at it, my fights now are 5 2-minute round fights. That's 10 minutes of fighting. Now I do 10 3-minute rounds. Now I'm fighting pretty much 3 fights. Instead of fighting 10 minutes, now I'm fighting 30 minutes. So a lot of good stuff there. It sucks in the moment when you get about 4 rounds in, but you know, the last 6, who's counting?
Right, exactly. So you get the fight. You're fighting LJ. Is it Hemrick Jr.? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, Hemrick Jr.
Okay, so how was that first fight? Could you just tell the day that you kind of traveled down there that it was back? Because you kind of said that, you know, you gave up MMA because, you know, the motivation wasn't there anymore. Could you just tell that you kind of walked into the right place?
Man, I knew it the whole way up to it. I knew it from the moment we went to the tryouts and I talked to Kevin, and it was starting to go my way. My love started coming back. My dedication came back. I'm not motivated. Like I said, I'm a lazy person. I'm not motivated. I'd rather sit at home, smoke some weed, and watch TV all day. But I can't. and I love gummy worms. So what my cousin calls it is I'm disciplined. I'm not motivated to do any of this, but I'm still disciplined to get my ass up and do it. That brought the discipline back, and that brought back a little compassion to it and a little motivation to, because this is what I wanted to do. It's what I wanted. It was being given to me for the first time in my life. What I had asked for was being given to me. So, of course, it brought a little motivation to show them, like, stop making me beg for shit. Y'all made me beg. I'm about to show y'all motherfuckers. Y'all been shooting yourself in the foot. So that whole week, that whole experience was surreal. I mean, it was the first time I had had that much confidence going into a fight. I was coming off a knockout loss. He was coming off of two knockout wins. I should have been very nervous, a little scared even, but I wasn't. I felt something in my bones that this was right. I mean, I was cutting weight a week before the fight. I was almost 10 pounds below the contracted weight. So I went out and I ate steak hibachi and some white rice and enjoyed myself and had a good night on the town, went to a couple bars. I don't drink anything like that. But I went and had a good dinner and had a good night, didn't focus on cutting weight, didn't focus on, oh, I got to go to bed by this time so I can wake up and eat because my weight has to be right. So I enjoyed the whole ride. So for that to happen for the first time in my career, to go down like that, to enjoy every second of every day leading up to the fight, I knew I was going to win. I knew this was my moment. I just knew there was no way I could lose. Even if I had lost the fight, there was no way I could lose that moment. It felt too good.
What goes through your hands? You know, you're sat out back, you're getting your hands wrapped, and you know it's time for war, essentially.
That's when my nerves really end. I usually get a little jitters before a fight, like I'm about to go fight in front of all these people. I get a little bit of butterflies, like, oh my goodness, what am I doing? This is stupid. But as soon as that rap hits, something in my mind clicks that I know, like you said, we're about to go to war. Like, there's no turning around at that point. I mean, there's no backing out at that point. And if I did back, I mean, I'm physically, I could back out, of course. Anybody could. But how stupid would I look? And who would take me serious at that point? Even my own cousin, who flew to Florida with me for that fight. This, to me, that's one of the best moments, really, is when that tape hits you, because there's no going back. Like, it's real. There's no telling people, oh, yeah, I got a fight coming up. I'm training for a fight. I'm going to be a fighter. No, you're a fighter because you're about to get in a fight whether you want to or not, because that tape's on now. So it's official. Like, you are officially that corner. And it's when that tape hits, you know it's about to go down because you're only two, three fights before it's your turn. And man, in my experience, when it's your turn to fight and there's two or three fights left, it's like those motherfuckers want you to fight faster or something. So the other guy will be like, hey, I'll just lay down. Let's make this fight over. Let's get him out here faster. Just, it happens so fast. So that's a do or die moment right there for me when that tape hits.
What do you remember from the fight? You know, it was a quick night's work, essentially.
Weirdly enough, that's another reason why I feel like bare knuckle is made for me. I remember a lot about that fight than I have in any other fight. I mean, I remember it from the jump. When we came out, I was nervous. I remember doing my little chest thing and thinking in my head, like, oh, nobody on camera is going to be able to hear me scream. So you can see that I don't even do a sound with it. I just do the, you know, the inaudible little chest pound for the wild man, and just little stupid shit like that was going through my head. And then seeing him walk in, I was like, well, we're about to fight. And then as a fan, taking my first step into that company, it was crazy. I was in my head. I was like, man, there's Dan Mergliotta right there. There's no TV in between us. And then he looks at me and says, come here, toe the line. I'm like, oh, shit. Like, I'm really about to toe the fucking line. And then I look down, and it's the official toe the line mark. And I'm like, oh, fuck. We're not dreaming, guys. This is real. And as soon as Dan said, knuckle up, it clicked. And I was like, yep, we're fighting. And then LJ jabbed me in my fucking nose, and I felt the warm liquid come down. And in my head, I was like, damn, he hit me that fast. Like, that's how fast we're really starting. And I remember touching my nose, and I see the blood on my fingertip. And in my head, I'm like, fuck, now the crowd thinks I'm losing. Like, I'm the first guy bleeding. I'm losing the fight. Everyone thinks I'm getting beat up. So it was fucking 0 to 100. Put on the gas, and I remember hitting him really hard the first time with that left, and I felt the dolt in my hand, and I was like, yeah, this is bare knuckle. There are no gloves. Like, okay, this is the real deal. And I remember seeing the punches come towards me and feeling in the moment, I felt like he was just missing. I didn't know I was using head movement. I didn't know, because normally I don't. I just fight. I walk forward and I fucking fight. It was weird. I usually don't use foot movement. I usually don't look like that type of fighter who is trained for that. I just go in there and take them down and get it done, or I look like an average guy. So to me, it was cool to see that and be able to think about that stuff in the moment. Like, I threw my first actual willing body shot against LJ. I mean, it was only one, but still, it was the first time I threw a body shot in a fight and thought about it beforehand, like, ooh, hit him in the body. His hands are up high, hit him low. So it was just, for that experience alone, was just great to have that kind of control in the fight and be behind the driver's seat and, you know, instead of watching from the back.
And then just raw emotion when you won?
Raw emotion. It was just, it's nuts. I mean, even now watching it, I get embarrassed after the knockout, after I get in the camera and I'm screaming, I want all the smoke. Like, I don't like how shrill my voice gets. I'll turn it off real fast and get all red. I'm like, oh, post-fight emotions. Don't mind none of that shit. That's stupid. I don't like, but yeah, that's the raw emotions coming out. Just can't contain it. But I'm not that kind of guy. I'm not going to walk around screaming everywhere. I don't walk around flexing everywhere and roaring. I'm not that kind of guy, but in that moment, for bare knuckle, that was the most primal I've ever felt as a fighter. So it felt more right to express those emotions in that moment than to try to fight. So,
did they say anything afterwards? Did the did they say, "Hey, you're going to be coming back? What a performance!" or anything like
that? No, nothing like that, really. My manager, of course, said, "Good job. You know, we didn't think you had it in you." Him personally was like, man, he goes, I knew you could fight. He's like, but I didn't know it was like that. He goes, I didn't know you were really going to show up. Chris Lytle was cool. He talked to me afterwards, and Sean Wheelock. They were really impressed that I showed up and did what I said. Excuse me. I didn't show up and say, hey, I'm coming here to fight and then play on the outside and run. I said, I don't care if he hits me. I'm not going to care. I'm going to walk forward and I'm going to fight this motherfucker if he beats me. And that's what I did. So it was really cool to have, you know, a legend like Chris Lytle and a legend in the broadcast team like John Wheelock from Bellator and all these places done broadcast work talk to me like I was somebody cool. And for Chris Lytle to be like, man, I can't wait till, you know, to see you fight again. So that was kind of like my first clue, like, oh, Chris Lytle is interested in seeing me fight again. Maybe that's a good sign. It's a good feeling. It put me in a good mindset. So then we go back to the back locker rooms where hugging each other, taking pictures. We're so excited. We made our dream come true. We fought on a major promotion. Just me and her, we showed all the haters that told me that if I trained with my overweight lesbian cousin who never fought in her life, just went to class and trained herself, that I would never make it anywhere. Like, to have that moment to show them, like, fuck you guys, we did it. It was great. And then after that kind of settled down, some of the fighters in the locker room were telling us congratulations. You know, we did good. Some of the medical guys, I guess, or some of the affiliates for BKFC, some of the, you know, employees that help move stuff around and stuff like that, they were like, oh, cool, man, yeah, you'll definitely be back. That's the type of stuff they like to see. But it really didn't set in until I saw Nate in the back, and had his headset on. He was watching the next fight, and I went up to him, and I shook his hand, and I said, thanks for the opportunity. You know, I know you didn't have to give it to me. I pretty much begged you. I was probably annoying you guys, but you stuck your neck out, and you gave me a chance, so I appreciate that. And then I got a little cocky afterwards, and I went to walk away, and I turned back and I said, oh yeah, Nate, I told your ass, don't make me beg next time. And he kind of just laughed it off and said, no, you'll definitely be back. And my opponent LJ actually told me that they probably wouldn't have me back for like another year, because it was a year layoff for him. But I kind of just let that go through my ears. I was like, no, Nate said I'm gonna be back. That's not the case for here. Like, they know I'll fight anyone anywhere, anytime. And me and my cousin had put it in our heads that we were going to fight on the next Knucklemania. It was our next goal. Like, it's going to happen. We've come this far. We've made everything happen. That's going to happen. So I started bugging my manager, like, hey, I'm not injured. I'm not hurt. At first, it was the Miami card with Hector Lombard and Lorenzo Hunt. I told Nate, hey, I ain't banged up. Give me a couple weeks for my little cut to heal. I'll be ready to go. But that didn't happen. And then we started setting our sights on Knucklemania. And we started campaigning for it, bugging them, begging them, telling them it was going to happen, telling them we'll fight anybody, it didn't matter who, whatever, pretty much manifesting it to happen. And sure enough, we got the call, and we were first offered to fight Howard Davis. And that was pretty much a take it or leave it. If you want a knuckle mania, this is what it is. I mean, of course, I said, yeah, fuck it, I'll fight it. 3 weeks goes by. You know, I've been training hard a couple times a day, getting ready for Howard Davis. Then I get a call and it says, hey, your opponent broke his jaw. And I'm like, fuck, what was Howard doing? And my manager goes, oh, shit. He goes, you did say yes to Howard, didn't you? He goes, we had a miscommunication on that part because Howard has another opponent. He goes, you had a different opponent. That guy broke his jaw. I said, oh, well, fuck. I said, oh, well. I said, it's still knuckle mania, whatever. What do we go from here? And he said, well, we got another option from you or for you, but he's undefeated. He's an up-and-comer out of Miami. He's a hometown guy. And if you don't take this fight, you're not fighting on knuckle mania, pretty much. Same thing with Howard, like, take it or leave. Okay, I don't care. I'll fight him. And that was Edgar. Mm. So that was a fun little trip because I thought I was fighting Howard. Really, I was fighting some other guy. And he broke his jaw, and I was ended up fighting another dude. So that was like a three opponent fight camp.
What's your review of that fight? He was just better on the night.
Man, I nothing against the guy. And if you see this Edgar, I don't mean no disrespect, but if you feel that way, fight whatever. But I don't feel he was a better fighter on that night. I don't. Even watching the fight back, I feel I was winning. I mean, if you look at the punch stats, I think his numbers were a little higher. But in the moment, I had way less damage, obviously. I had no bruising. I had no red marks. I had no blood other than my hand. I mean, all the blood I was covered in was his. I felt I was landing the more damaging strikes. I remember the strikes he landed in the fight, and they didn't hurt. I'm not saying that to be a dick. I'm not saying it to sound like a badass. They just didn't hurt. It felt like he had pressed his fist on my face and just pushed. Like there was no actual impact behind me. The shot that got me, he was the better fighter on that moment because I didn't see that shit coming. I gauged my aggression wrong. And I re-engaged at the wrong time. And he threw that quick little step-in jab and glided it perfectly across the shoulder. So, I mean, props to him because that was a good punch. Obviously. So I mean, it definitely changed the game. It locked my legs up. I wasn't incoherent, but it made my legs stiffen out. I couldn't make my legs move. So I wobbled to the rope. And in my head, I was like, man, I'm about to Mortal Kombat this dude. I'm going to cover up. I'm going to eat these shots. And when my legs loosen up, I'm just going to everything I got uppercut this motherfucker in the ceiling. The next thing I know, I can hear my cousin telling me to get the fuck up. So it all changed real quick for me. And, like I said, I don't feel like he was a better fighter on that night. I just feel like he had the best punch of the night. I guess is the best way to look at it.
Is BKFC, like, do you have a set number of fights? Is it fight to fight? Like, how does that work?
No, unfortunately, no. I don't have a multi-fight deal with them yet. Hopefully they will pull their heads out their asses and see that I'm a company guy and just give me one. I would like, but right now it's fight to fight. I'm not trying to fight for any other bare knuckle promotion right now. None of them interest me. They all seem smaller. I don't care what they've got in the works for them. I don't care that BYB is working with BKB. I don't give a fuck about that. BKFC is the UFC at bare knuckle, and you can't prove me wrong. I mean, BYB is on YouTube, so that's cool. You're on YouTube. Like, that's great. You're doing good. You're getting out there for the world to see. I'm not knocking you. But BKFC has their own app. You have to pay for their shit. So, I mean, there's a lot of better things that other promotions have, I'm sure. But I'm strictly BKFC at the moment. Unless, of course, a better opportunity comes, which I don't see it happening because I love this company so much. They really have to offer me something to make me love the promotion. But as of right now, if BKFC gets done with me, then I'm done.
Did you know, looking back, did you ever think that it would grow to be as big as it is? Because it's like the fastest growing sport.
Man, I never thought it would be anything, to be honest with you. Like doing MMA and all that, I always thought that's what it would always be. Would be boxing, MMA, kickboxing. I never, ever in the slightest part of my mind thought bare knuckle boxing would come back and be a thing. When they started doing the MMA sparring gloves with the exposed knuckles, when they first did that in the little downward elevated circle ring that they had, I thought it was a joke, man. I was like, man, it's cool, you know, it's bare knuckle, but you still have gloves on. Like, you're still doing MMA. You just have a strip of fucking padding missing. Like, that's stupid. what's the point to be a man and take the shit off? And I thought it wasn't going to go anywhere. I thought it was just going to come and go, be quick, someone to try to do something new, but it wasn't going to stick, and it was just going to fade off into nothing. And then, like I said, I saw the Artelman Jason Knight fight, and that's the one that really stuck out to me. Like, holy shit, like, they're really making this big. They're taking it. Because it's Artem Lobov, it's Jason Knight. Like, these are guys from the UFC. Of course, they had Joey Beltran already and a couple other names like Kendall Grove and shit. But that was the big name that stuck out to me, because Artem Lobov trains with Conor McGregor. Mm. Like, of course. Jason Knight was on Ultimate Fighter. And he had a pretty good little resume in the UFC. So it was – and then the way they fought, like, that just – that really showed me that this was going to go somewhere and be something, because the level of raw violence – that me as a fighter that saw and I took from it, I can only imagine with someone who is just watching for fights for entertainment, what they would. It blew my mind as a fighter. And here I am doing this sport for almost fucking 17, 18 years now, you know, being a teenager training and all that shit up until to where I am now fighting, like all that time total together. For that to blow my mind like that, imagine what it's doing for everybody else. So I saw the potential in it there of what it could really be for the world. Bringing it back.
Where does the nickname the Wild Man come from?
That actually, my nickname when I was younger, when I was a teenager, I wanted it to be the Martian, because I had a thing going around. I was, you know, a little cocky teenager. I like to go around and tell everybody my fighting style was out of this world. Well, my grandpa, who is a big supporter in what I do, he at first, he really wasn't. He thought it was dumb. He thought I needed to get a real job. But after he saw that I really loved it, I was winning, he really got behind it. He started watching it on TV more, asking me questions, started coming to my fights. Well, he told me one day we were eating lunch, just being goofy. He said, man, one day after you beat up one of these fellers, you ought to beat on your chest like old Tarzan did, like an old wild man. And I did it for him, man. I did it because he came to one of my King of the Cage fights at Riverwind in Norman. And so I finished the guy, and I did the little, you know, chest thing for my grandpa and screamed real loud, and it kind of just stuck. So I just started calling myself the Wild Man, because people started saying, you know, I scream like a wild man, and he's saying I need to beat my chest like a wild man. So I changed it for him. So that's why it's the Wild Man, is for my grandpa.
In one of the interviews I watched ready for this, I was making notes, and you mentioned that you got tased on TV.
Yeah, good times. I was on the show Shipping Wars. I was working for, when I was in Albuquerque in New Mexico, working for that business I was telling you about where I did more work fighting. It was a security company. And I guess Shipping Wars had tried to reach out to the military out there about some kind of shipment of some military device they had or something. Well, the military didn't want to do it with them because it was for TV. They wanted it, of course, to be confidential military. So Shipping Wars, the producers thought that was just too good of an episode to let go. So they hired us, a private security firm, the company I was with, they hired all of us and all of our guards. And then they gave us an allowance to go to this tactical attire shop to get like tactical vest, tactical pants, pretty much look like we were special forces, like military operatives. They rented us some Yukon Denalis and had limo tent put on them. And so they were going to reenact this military shipment of this, whatever this was, and we were the military team convoying Roy, who was the guy that was doing the shipping. We were convoying him from one glove location to the next. Well, they wanted to add drama to it, to the show or whatever, and spice up the episode. So they were joking, and they came up to us as a group and said, hey, we'll give you guys an extra $100 if you let us tase you for the show. I do stupid shit all the time, so I just said, fuck it. I'll take an extra $100. I'll do it. And it became a serious thing at that point. It was no longer a joke because I was willing to do it. So they made me sign another contract for a waiver of liability pretty much. And so the owner of the security company, we started reenacting the tase or whatever, practicing it. He'd come up behind me. He would punch me in my back and I would fall to the ground, kind of get my body used to how I was supposed to fall. And then when it was time to go, they just, it was time to go. It was like a real life situation. I jumped out of the car. I rushed the dude like I was supposed to. And the next thing I can hear is taser, taser, and pop. That's the last thing I hear. And then I felt the jolt of electricity go through my body. I'm in my head. I'm trying to make my arms quit flopping. but I can't make them quit flopping as hard as I'm trying it. And the next thing I know, they yell cut, whatever, and then one of the guys runs up and just yanks the shit out of my back real hard. So
as the wild man, is that the wildest thing you've done?
Ooh, I don't know, man. I've done some crazy stuff. I've went streaking just because. other wilds I've done. Man, that's a tough one, man. I like to fuck with anything wildlife. That's what my cousin calls my toxic traits. That's probably the most wild thing I've actually probably done. And it's not like a dangerous wild thing or nothing. I saw a deer on the side of the road and we stopped because I made a bet with my cousin that I could catch it. And I chased it for a good, 10, 15 yards. And I'm not bragging, but I was, probably 5-6 feet behind it. I felt like I was putting on a good chase. I was like, I'm about to catch this motherfucker. It jumped over a bush. I jumped over the bush. And in my head, I'm like, fuck, I'm really doing this. Like, this is really crazy. And then it jumped over a barbed wire fence. And I was like, I like my nuts. I'm not doing that. So I stopped right before the fence. That might be one of the wild things I've ever done. I've had a confrontation with a raccoon where they outsmarted me. And I feel like they knew what they were doing. I had him on a telephone pole and he was playing peekaboo, going side to side. And every time I go to one, he'd go to one. He'd squat back and fuck with me. I guess I have to say probably the one time I tried acid and went to the lake might be the most wild thing I did. I stuck my foot in the water and I felt like it was the I don't know if you've ever seen the Pagemaster, where the kid he goes to the library and the cartoon books come and then like all these like paint colors start flooding the library. Oh, yeah. I felt like that's what the lake was the paint color and stuff. And I felt like as soon as I stuck my foot in it, it started submerging up my leg. And we have alligators in the lake here. So I didn't know if an alligator was going to pull me in. That might be the most wild thing I've ever done, because you're not supposed to swim when you take acid. And you're definitely not supposed to swim near gators. And I did both. So
a whole host of different ones to pick from.
Whole host. Yeah. It's mostly in my younger days. Now that I'm a dad, I don't do nothing too crazy. Craziest thing I do is get in a square and circle and fight grown men bare knuckle. So,
and I believe you have a ghost called Benny in your attic.
Oh yes, yeah. So you heard about Benny? Oh yeah. So I'm petrified of ghosts. I have a big thing. If there's a ghost in the house and I hear it and I see a sign of it, I'm gone. I'm not playing around with that shit. I used to tell my baby mama when we were together, if a ghost comes in this house in the middle of the night and I yell to wake the fuck up, and you don't wake the fuck up, I'm gone. Like, you're dead. I'm jumping out the window. You and them kids is gone. I'm giving you one chance and I'm out. Until I met Benny. Benny changed my life. Now, any other ghost, they can fuck themselves. I don't fuck with them. But Benny, wherever he's at, I don't know what he's doing. When I moved in this house about two and a half years ago now, I'll hear shit running. And I call him Benny because it sounds like a cool little kid name to me, like an old-timey kid. Like, he's a ghost. He's got a childish behavior. Benny's an old school name. Benny just sings wrong. But out here running, and it's not like Bigfoot sounds like a grown person running. It sounds like a little kid running back and forth just constantly throughout the day for no damn reason. And then, like, take this Dr. Pepper, for instance. I'll put this down. I'll go make a Hot Pocket. I'll come back. My Dr. Pepper is now over there by the couch. Doesn't ever fuck with me. I don't wake up with scratch marks and no scary shit like that. I don't hear weird ass creepy voices telling me to get out. Sometimes there's marker on my wall. Sometimes shit's moved. Sometimes I just can't find shit. And I hear a lot of running. So that's all Benny does. He just likes to fuck with you. Likes to keep you up at night, likes to move the shit from you, make you look for it. Now there's also been times where I was looking for something and then gave up and thought I just lost it. Like, fuck, I can't find it. I lost it. And you come back and it was in the very exact spot I looked at it for the first time. So I really believe I have a ghost here.
So sometimes he's helpful. He finds things for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes he takes the joke a little far and he's like, oh, I hit that one too well. Let me go ahead and be nice. You lost. So, I mean, I like it. I talk shit to him. I talk shit about him and nothing bad happens. So we get along great. We get along real great. He just likes to, I just let him run up, do his little shit in the attic and let him move shit. I don't, but I'm getting his way.
So is there anybody in BKFC at the minute that you'd like to fight?
Well, I've got a few people I'm beefing with. Of course, my big one right now is the one I was supposed to fight coming up here, hopefully, and the one I was supposed to hopefully fight in August was going to be Tony Locosoto. I called him out because I noticed he was looking for a fight and no one else was really chirping up to fight him. I was looking for a fight, wasn't really getting much response, so I picked him. I called him out, and then kind of started a meme war, like a friendly shit talking thing. He started talking shit to me. I started talking shit to him. We got people involved. We got the promotion involved. And then, of course, I had to get my hand all wrapped up again. So that fight, I definitely want to happen. I think that'll be a good one for both me and Tony, not as athletes trying to work our way up. Of course, that'll work because we're both the type of fighters that we let the win-win for us. I think it's a great fight for the fans as a potential fight of the year, whatever year it takes place, because we're both going to show up and we're not going to quit until someone goes down. And that's all strictly on a good note that I would like to fight him. That's just one for the storybook that I can tell my grandkids one day that I had a really good fight with somebody that was really tough and put it on me and challenged me. There's a little bitch out in the world who's ranked number 5 right now at 145. This motherfucker is on my nerves. I don't dislike the guy because he's not worth it. He's just annoying. I called him out after my fight because I saw the unofficial rankings and he was on there. So I called everybody out. Well, he was the first one to respond to me and told me he didn't want to fight me. He would rather fight Rusty Crowder, who'd just come off a loss against Howard Davis at the time, or he would rather fight Brandon Lambert, who he claimed was a trap. He's trash. Was a joker, but just like get on Facebook, talk shit to people, wasn't a real fighter. Which seems to be the consensus these days anyways with Brandon Lambert. But so I called him out after he had told me on, you know, private message that he'd rather fight those two guys instead of me. I kind of thought it was funny and I took a screenshot of the messages and I tagged BKFC in it on Instagram and said, this is y'all's number 4 guy that he's turning down real fights and he wants to fight someone who he says is a piece of trash or he'd rather fight someone coming off a loss instead of someone looking to fight him. And it just went downhill for him from there. He just started talking all kinds of mad shit. He used to message me every morning. He follows me on almost every platform. He talks about me every chance he fucking gets and tells the world how I'm nobody and I don't hold no worth and how I got slept in my last fight. But it's little Miss Kai Stewart. If you're watching this, don't be a bitch. Quit talking shit and just fight me. I'd love to fight him at a pure pleasure. I just want to hurt him at a pure principle. I want to do it in Great Falls, Montana, since he's afraid to leave there. He won't fight outside of his hometown. So I want to smash him in front of his mama. I want his daddy and his mama to know that they are not the only ones in the world that can give that little bit of an ass whooping that he's never believed in. And it's at a pure principle just because he keeps talking shit. That's annoying. And if he beats me, great, but I really don't think there is. So that's one of the main ones that I would like to do if I had to actually pick a fight, just because it's a fight. So why not pick somebody who I've got beef with? And that's the main one. I mean, I say I've got beef with him, but I really don't care. It don't bother me. I think it's funny. And I really just like to beat him up so he can shut up.
Chevy, do you have a bucket list of things that you'd like to achieve before you retire? Like maybe like a certain number of fights, arenas that you'd like to fight in?
Not really a certain number of fights or arenas. I haven't really thought of it that way. Really is just kind of fight some of the guys if I can that I look up to now. I want one of those moments where, you know, you watch the UFC and you watch a new guy come in and he's like, oh man, I've watched this guy. He was my idol and now he's my rival. I want one of those moments. I want, like, say, Conor McGregor, for instance. Say BKFC signed him. And I'm 5 years down the road. I've already been fighting BKFC. He's still in prime enough to fight whatever, and they sign him. Something like that would be on my bucket. Fight someone that I've watched so much of, be such a star in the world, and to be considered good enough to share that ring. That's a bucket list for me, is to fight someone that I know for a fact is on a higher level than me. And now in that moment when I'm looking across that ring and I see that person looking back at me, I'll know that I'm there too. That's really my bucket list. I mean, travel-wise, I'd really like to fight in Australia or fight in Thailand. So those are my I guess, main bucket list things for fighting is just good places to travel. I like to travel. I'm from a small town. I grew up poor. I didn't get to go on a lot of field trips as in school. And quite frankly, I'm kind of salty about it. So now I'm trying to go on all kinds of field trips now that I'm growing. So that's my main thing is just traveling and getting to see shit.
So Chevy, one question that I always like to finish on is what would you tell somebody that wants to follow in your footsteps? And then also, you know, what would you tell somebody that kind of had the hard life growing up that you did? Because obviously, look where you are now.
Man, as bad as it may sound, if it's a kid or whatever it is, fuck everybody that tells you you can't do it. If they tell you you can't do it, if they say something that, oh, you could do it, but there's this chance of this, fuck him. Fuck him and fuck everybody that came with. If you know you want to do it and you believe you can do it, and who cares if you can do it or not, just fucking do it. Do it to the best of your ability. Do it to your satisfaction. And don't stop until you're fucking done. Don't let nobody tell you you're too old. Don't nobody tell you you can't do this, you can't do that. Just do it. I'm a perfect example that you can come from literally nothing. Both of my parents were drug addicts. My mom is still a drug addict. I still don't talk to her. My dad went to prison for 12 years this last stint for one of the biggest drug busts in this area. So what more example would somebody need to show that you can come from literally nothing and make something out of it? And no matter how big or small it is to other people, to me, BKFC is my dream right now because it's a major fight promotion that's seen over the world. That was always my goal in MMA, was fight for the UFC, fight for a major fucking promotion, fight for Bellator. Then I'll know that I made it. Well, now I have made it. So you can too. Doesn't matter. I'm not a champion. I've only got two fights. I'm 1-1. But my dream is still fulfilled if I was to retire. If the doctor was to come back and say, hey, your hand's not getting better, you're never fighting again. Cool. I lived my dream because I'm satisfied with it. I accomplished what I wanted to do. I got my ass up there and I put my ass on the line in front of the entire world to see. So that's my message to everyone else that wants to follow my footsteps is fuck everyone that tells you no or even hints at the word no. You can do it. You can do it to however the fuck you feel like.
If you just want to tell everybody in Chevy where they can find you on all of your social media, then anything you've got coming up, any fights, any businesses, anything like that?
Man, I've got a few things I'm working on. I'm not going to really say out loud just yet because it's not really set concrete, really. I am starting to breed dogs. So anybody needing some dogs, hit at me. My Instagram is the_wildman_BKFC. I'm under Chevy the Wildman Bridges on Facebook. And that's really the best ways to get a hold of me. I'm working on getting my hand better, staying strong, getting better for my last performance. So the next time I'm out there, I can look good for everybody. And anybody has any questions or wants to get some work in or whatever the case may be, you know, get a hold of me. I'm here.
Well, Chevy, I just want to thank you for your time. And yes, sir. We are at TLR MMA on Instagram and Twitter. And this is The Last Round.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Last Round MMA Podcast. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes and interviews. In the meantime, follow The Last Round MMA on Twitter and Instagram at TLR MMA.